Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Welcome, New York. Welcome, New Jersey. Welcome everywhere else in the Mid-Atlantic states. And this morning, I'd like to welcome Philadelphia, because on the phone I have an old friend, Scott O'Neill. Met Scott. Scott, how you doing, buddy?
Never been better, Bruce. How about you?
I'm doing great. How's the family?
Family's terrific. Happy and healthy. You got the girls playing lacrosse just off of basketball season, so it's been good.
I got to tell you, I had to coach a inter-squad yesterday at the high school where I help out, and I'm walking next door, and on the football field, there were 4- and 5-year-old kids with sticks that were twice as big as them. I couldn't believe it. I mean, but they were into it. They were absolutely into it. Lacrosse has taken off, no question, and it's always been big up where you are. But anyway, let's get to work. I haven't talked to you since last year. A lot's happened to you since last year. The one thing that I did want to talk to you about a little bit is about what your plans are. Now you're the CEO of the 76ers. When we spoke last, you were involved with Madison Square Garden. You were in charge of pretty much everything there. I want to say you were CEO of the Garden.
Yes, president of the sports group there, so overseeing the Knicks and Rangers and boxing and tennis, college basketball, all that stuff. So it was a fun gig, but nothing like this. This is Philadelphia is a pretty magical sports city. The passion is pretty unmatched in terms of the fans, and they get it. You know, we came in here. Good. It's always good when kind of a new group comes in together. So the general manager, Sam Hinkie, young, brilliant sports mind, 36 years old. I imagine the youngest GM in the league. New coach, Brett Brown, spent 12 years in San Antonio. Incredible. Like, all just good people. We all have the same goals, same mission. Everybody's going in the same direction. And we knew this year was one that we had to reset. So we did pretty aggressively, both on the business side and the basketball side. So you saw a team clearly making moves to prepare for the future. So we kept saying, tomorrow is much more important than today. So we made a bunch of moves. We moved Evan Turner, former number 2 overall pick, Spencer Hawes, and we acquired a lot of draft picks. So we've got 2 lottery picks. Actually, Jrue Holiday is another guy we moved right before the season. So with the Jrue Holiday trade, we got Michael Carter-Williams with the 11 pick, who is going to be the Rookie of the Year, which is really exciting, or should be Rookie of the Year. And we got number 6 pick. We took Nerlens Noel, a kid from Kentucky, 6'11", right, long pogo stick, but who missed the season with a knee injury. Boy, if he's as good as he's looking right now, we're in really good shape. So you've got 2 really good lottery picks that'll be a year better, year older, year stronger. And we've got 2 lottery picks in this upcoming draft. So we got tremendous amount of cap flexibility. So we're clearly building for the future through the draft, and we think it's the smartest strategy given the current CBA and how the game works. And you know how deep this draft is. So May 20th is a very, very big day for us. That's the lottery day. So if you have any lucky charms and you want to pull them out on my behalf, I'd really much appreciate it. It's really exciting.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send you a couple. I've got something for you, and I'll tell you about it later, and you'll be impressed because they're World Series things that I had on during the World Series when the Giants swept Detroit. So I'll give you something like that.
I like that.
Hey,
listen.
Let me tell you something. The first time I ever met you was on a baseball field, and and your dad brought you to No Bats Baseball Club. I'm not going to get into No Bats. It's just a fun group of guys, businessmen from all over the country. And Scotty, at that time, I mean, you were one hell of an athlete. I remember it. Now I know, because every time I get you on the phone, you were one of the biggest sports fans in the history of sports. Now, you went to Villanova, right?
Villanova Wildcat. Yes, I did.
You couldn't end up in a better place right now than Philly, could you?
It's nice to be home. I mean, I have a lot. I spent 10 years. My wife and I got married while we were here. I had my first baby here, bought my first house here, went to school here. So it's definitely nice a nice feeling to, you know, feels like home. I grew up in New York, but this is definitely home to me. So it's fantastic.
You know, and working with the Devils isn't going to be a tough thing to do. That's a train ride, right? Not a big deal.
Yeah, easy commute up. You know, we've got some challenges there as well, as you can imagine. That's a franchise that even when they were winning Stanley Cups, you know, this is a you know, really proud history and tradition of hockey. And you know, we got our work cut out for us on the business side. So when you have a GM like Lou Lamoriello, who's been at it for 25 years and in the Hall of Fame, one of the great minds of the game, you're in pretty secure hands there. And our real challenge is how do you make this a world-class business operation?
Well, I think if anybody can do it, Scott, you can do it. We're on the phone with Scott O'Neill, the CEO of the New Jersey Devils and the Philadelphia 76ers, and a lot more hats he wears. He just, you know, I'd have to do a segment on everything you do, especially with charities too. Scott, let me ask you a question. It doesn't get any better than the NBA playoffs. And last night, I tried to stay awake because I was up early yesterday. I didn't get to see the end until this morning of the Oklahoma City game. Are all these series going to come down to seven games? I mean, what's going on? This is unbelievable.
This is like for any basketball fan, you just really look forward to this time of year. And I you know, haven't been around the game now for 20 years. I can't remember a first round like this. I just can't. I mean, you know, I mean, even the Lillard big shot the other night, knocking out Houston. I mean, it's I'm really, really my favorite series was Clippers Golden State.
Oh, unbelievable!
A lot of drama around the series, but I just love the style of play of those two teams. They both get up and down the court, fiery and competitive. And as a recovering point guard myself, to be able to see Steph and CP3 go at it every single night, it's a true joy. Those are two of the just fiercest competitors, smartest and best people in the game. And so, boy, was that a fun series?
You know, I'm a big Spurs guy because I have a great long term memory. And when I was substantially younger, when Tim Duncan was at Wake Forest, I used to take people to the ACC tournament. You know, because that's what I did. I was in sports entertainment. And I was sitting down in some pretty good seats, and a guy sat down next to me, and I knew who he was when he sat down. And I don't get embarrassed very often, but I was pretty embarrassed. But you know me, I wasn't embarrassed enough to not say hi. And it was Jerry West. And Jerry West sat down with me, and we started talking. And he said, hey, who do you like in this tournament? You know, because it was ACC tournament. And Duncan, I want to say, was a sophomore then. And I said, I like the swimmer from Wake Forest. He started laughing. He goes, we like him too, but he won't be around when we pick. And sure enough, Tim Duncan has put in one hell of a career already. And I'm looking, and I really didn't expect them to lose last night. I thought they'd win last night, and they got beat. Can Dallas do it to them? Can they put them out?
Well, they match up really well against them. I think Monte Ellis has certainly been an X factor in that series. When he gets it going, I mean, they have a lot of good pieces, sure, but when Monte Ellis, at least from what I've seen of the series, I've seen three games, he seems to be the X factor. When he gets going, they can beat them. San Antonio, and I don't know if it's just matchups, they do look a little step slow out there. They've been so dominant in the regular season. One of the best regular season performances I've seen in some time. So I was expecting a much more lopsided series. The great thing about Game 7s is you never know. On the other hand, boy, it's really nice to have that home court advantage.
Yeah.
So you have to give the edge to San Antonio in this series.
No, I hear you. In Oklahoma City, I mean, when I fell asleep last night, they were losing. And then I go to NBA.com and click on it and just do a little bit of work and see what the final score was. And I see they pretty much, it looks
they
like,
them
yeah,
the yeah,
looks like they
but
were
you
hitting
know,
the ball from the outside pretty well.
Yeah, I have a pretty good rule of thumb with NBA games. I say, you know, if it's close to 2 minutes to go, you assess the situation and see who the best player on the court is or who's playing the best as the best player on the court. And that's usually the team that pulls it out. When you have Durant doing what Durant is doing, you know, other than one game in the series, I mean, if he's not the best player on the planet, he's second.
Yeah, he's pretty damn good. Hey, Scott, hold on.
Memphis gives you fits, though. They play a really, really tough style of basketball.
Oh, yeah.
you know, they grind you. They grind you in that offense, too. They pound you on defense. Gasol's a heck of a player. Connolly, I think, the most underrated point guard in the league. They got some weapons. They're good. They have depth, too.
Hey, Scott, hold on. We're going to do another segment in a minute. We'll be back in a minute on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'll be back with Scott O'Neill in a minute.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BH Sports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. I'm on the line with Scott O'Neill, the CEO of the Philadelphia 76ers and the New Jersey Devils. Scott, thanks for holding on. There's been a lot of NBA news lately, and all that hasn't been good until recently. Donald Sterling, the owner of the Clippers, you know, everybody knows the story. I don't even want to get into it. It was kind of made me sick to even think about it. And in a lot of ways, I almost feel bad, even though the guy's an idiot, for what happened to him, because people can be taken advantage of from time to time, although I don't think that's the situation with this guy. But a guy came to the forefront, a guy you know real well, Adam Silver. You worked with Adam for years with the NBA, didn't you?
Yeah, almost 8 years. And yeah. I'll tell you, I think, you know, from my perspective, it's like having, you know, the good fortune to have him work so closely with him, and even better fortune to call him a good friend. It was a great moment. It was not a surprising moment. You have a really smart, strong, strategic guy who does the right thing time and time again, is an incredible leader. And you saw it. I mean, you saw it manifest itself. The guy, he's an incredible commissioner. The game is so lucky to have him at the helm. And even a nice nod to David Stern. I mean, you see what goes on in some other leagues when there's a transition from commissioner to commissioner. But, you know, David always said, hey, the best compliment a CEO can have is to have a smooth transition plan. And he certainly delivered that with Adam.
You know, the thing that I was most impressed with Adam, and I don't know Adam personally, I've never met him, but I know people that do know him. He went to Duke. I mean, he's a Duke University grad.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a Duke. He's an ACC guy. So that makes him automatically okay with me. And the other thing that I like about the guy is that he just doesn't seem to say anything. Every time I've ever seen him speak, he has something to say. Does that make sense? In other words,
yeah,
he's
not about – the great news is and the reason why he's so well-respected and well-liked by people in the business is it's never about him, never. It's about the game, the NBA, the teams, the owners, the players, the staff. He's just – he's what you want in someone running the league. And when you have somebody protecting the league, you know, it's that saying, you know, how amazing things – can get accomplished if you don't care who gets the credit. Like, that's, to me, that's Adam Silver. That's our commissioner.
You know, it's a true team effort. And, you know, people will look at what the NBA has accomplished. Now, people can say what they want about the NBA, and you know all the things they say about it. I'm not a huge NBA fan myself compared to Major League Baseball, the NFL, until we get closer to the playoffs. That's just the way I've always been, because there's just so much out there. But look at what they've done internationally with your help and with Adam's help and with obviously David Stern's help. You know, David caught a lot of flack just because the kind of guy he seems to be, you know, on TV. And I'll tell you what, David Stern did a pretty good job, didn't he?
Oh, man, he's another brilliant man, and happy to be mentored by him for several years as well. You know, here's a guy who took over a league that was falling apart.
Right.
And from that, he built a global content company that is, if you look at the statistics, the NBA folks and basketball folks would argue is the most popular played sport in the world, although the soccer folks might might not agree. But certainly the power presence of having one global league versus, you know, in soccer you've got six or seven power leagues around the world. You've got one league and all of that talent and content filtering into one, and what he's done in China and you know, games being broadcast in 212 countries. It's amazing. It's truly amazing. And they're a great 1-2 punch, and I'm glad we still have the 2 punch.
Now Adam was COO of the league, and he was extremely involved with all kinds of stuff, everyday operations of the NBA. You were director of business development, weren't you?
You know, I was the senior vice president of marketing and team business ops, so I dealt with all the teams. I also ran the Canadian business, a bunch of other little small, the D-League, the CRM business. So I ran a bunch of different businesses, but my primary role was to help the teams operate their businesses better and build best practices models and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was an incredible opportunity.
Scott,
my time there.
Hey, Scott, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a little something about it. And I know that your hands are tied as to what you can and can't say. Not that your hands are tied, but ethically, you're a good guy. And you're not going to say anything that misrepresents anything to do with the league. But this thing that happened with Sterling, you know, he's been involved with the league for over 30 years. I want to say he's been an owner since 81 or 82. And, you know, even some of the pictures I saw him in back 30-some-odd years ago, I remember seeing him on TV back then when the Clippers were, I want to say he bought them for next to nothing.
$12 million, yeah.
And the NBA, and you know, I guess, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that he was partially responsible because he owned the team. They improved their net worth to over $500 million. Is that accurate?
Easy.
Unbelievable. Now, yeah. Let me ask you this. If you're Donald Sterling, what is next for you? I mean, here's what I see. I mean, as a layman, and that's all I am. Believe me, I'm not an attorney. I wouldn't want to begin to pretend I was one. But what I would be worried about is losing the value of my franchise before I sell. So it seems to me that it would be advantageous for him to sell the team as soon as possible. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I haven't really thought much about that. I'm just kind of in my position. My total focus here is just
Sixers.
In particular in public, just supporting what is happening from the league front in terms of like when to sell, how to sell, what value you could sell it. I mean, when you look at a team like the Milwaukee Bucks just going for $550 million
in Milwaukee,
and you look. Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you'd think a team in L.A., you know, just by any standards, just if just by interests of billionaires alone of spending time in L.A. or living in L.A., the value of the franchise is going to be dramatically better. And then if you look at Sacramento going for, I guess, 580, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, it was under 600, barely, I think.
Yeah, I think it was 580. I mean, so you just can compare just, you know, why you'd buy a team. You want some desirability. You've got, you play in the Staples Center. You're in the second largest media market. You've got Chris Paul and Blake Griffin anchored in there for some time. I mean, it's a really, really desirable franchise. So I think the value will be, I think you'll see a big number. Record number.
Well, I'm sure the attorneys in the NBA office and I'm sure the Clippers attorneys, they'll work it out. And it seems to me, after seeing the way that Adam handled, you know, everything in the first week, it's going to be pretty soon when they get things worked out. And I think the sooner the better. At least that's what I believe. All right, I'm going to ask you the tough question now, Scott. This is the tough question. Who are the two teams going to be in the finals?
Man,
I mean, if you had my job,
if I had your job,
yeah.
I would say
I wish you did have my job.
And this is not going to be, you know, I'm going to say Heat, Thunder. And I just think the two best players in the league carry their teams. I know San Antonio. A lot of people are saying San Antonio. We'll see. I mean, they still have to get out of this round. I'm interested in this. I'm interested in today's games. I think. You know, Toronto, Brooklyn, I know no one's talking about the series like they are the rest of the series, but it's been incredible basketball and really intriguing. You've got the young startups in Toronto who nobody knows. I mean, there aren't, outside of the core, hardcore fans, I mean, my wife couldn't name one person on the Raptors. You know, and then you have them against the aging stars in Brooklyn, and you see Darren Williams trying to find himself as a star in the league, and Joe Johnson established, and Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. I mean, you're looking at a Hall of Fame list of Hall of Famers, and so, you know, do they have that stand in them? We'll see. So it's going to be fun. But these guys, these kids from Toronto, they are playing with no fear. They're so fun to watch. Kyle Lowry, I don't know if you know where he went to school, but that would be Villanova.
There you go.
He is a warrior.
Big East guy.
So fun to watch.
They're still in the Big East, aren't they?
Yes, we are.
Let me tell you something. That all of this stuff with the conferences got me
terrible.
So screwed up. I don't. Yeah, it's not
terrible.
It's not good for anything. Hey, let me have you. I got one tough question. Then we're gonna have to go. My Washington Wizards. I call them the Bullets. I still call them the Bullets. What do you think
you
about
should,
them?
And they
aren't
should
they
go
good?
Back to that name.
Yeah, we should.
I tell you what, John Wall and Bradley Beal. Would you put? I mean, other than Golden State's backcourt, even them, like, I love watching them play. And I didn't enjoy John his first couple years in the league. And when he came back from his injury last year, something clicked because he exploded last year. And I think it looks like he has grown into a real, true, everyday superstar.
Yeah.
I mean, watching him control the game, control the ball, control the pace, wait for his moment, get everybody engaged and involved. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And Beal can go.
Oh, he's 20 years old. My son's 24.
Boy, they are so fun to watch.
Yeah, they are.
I thoroughly enjoy watching them.
Yeah, and they got some big guys, too. That's kind of why they handled Chicago pretty easily, because they were just bigger and more physical than them and more talented. And now they've got the number one seed, and that's going to be interesting. I got an old friend of mine coming on later on the show, Steve Buckhantz. You probably know Buck. He's the voice of the Bullets. He's
sure.
He's from Arlington, Virginia. He grew up same town I did, and nobody's more excited than he is. Scott, I can't thank you enough for coming on
Mr.
the show.
Hall, nobody better than you.
Hey,
anything, anytime.
We got to have you on more often. I love you, Scotty, and good luck in Philly, and good luck in New Jersey with the Devils. I mean, that's going to be every bit as challenging as I think the Sixers are going to be a piece of cake for you, because you're a basketball guy, man. You know
the
that.
The Sixers are coming. Hey, listen, come up to a game next year, please.
I will. Thanks, Scott.
We'll
Scott O'Neill, everybody, CEO of the Philadelphia 76ers and the New Jersey Devils. This is Bruce Hall. We'll be back in a minute on Second Opinion on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back, and I've got one of my favorite people in the world, Jess Root, on the line. Jess, how are you doing today, buddy?
Doing great. How are you doing, Bruce?
Jess is a beat writer with the Arizona Cardinals. He's also big, and I'll probably only spend 10 seconds on the D-backs because I don't think anybody wants to hear about what their problems are. I'm just beginning to wonder if Kevin Towers is going to have a job here in a couple of weeks. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But listen, the Cardinals, you know how much I like them. And I love, you know, that is the best division in the NFL. There's no question. The NFC West has got nothing but quality coaching and a lot of good players. You got a Super Bowl out there this year, too.
Yes.
And, you know, wouldn't it be nice if the Cardinals somehow or another managed to pull off hosting that thing in more ways than one?
Well, in fact, that's been the talk. They're not shying away from that goal. Being the first to play in their own stadium for the Super Bowl. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen, but the expectation there, the anything less than a playoff berth for them is going to be a failure for them this year.
Well, you know, Bruce Arians is a hell of a coach, and you found that out. I mean, if you look at his background and you look at what he's done offensively everywhere he's gone, he's always been kind of a calming effect kind of a coach, even though you and I both know he's anything but calm from time to time. He's he's one of the few guys out there that is about my age that seems to be a lot younger just the way he coaches. Am I wrong in saying that?
he has a way of connecting with younger players, veteran players. There's just something about it. I don't know if it's because he's got that school ball coach approach, but he really, what he says, he really resonates in the locker room. And so his teams tend to win.
Hey, do me a favor. Tell me, let's go over the Cardinals roster right now. Now, I know you lost a slot receiver because the Redskins signed him as a free agent. What was that guy's name, and are you going to miss him?
Andre Roberts. Yeah. And I think, well, he won't be missed a ton because his, as we saw last year, whether it was a combination of the new offense that Arians installed or just the lack of playing time, he lost a lot of his playing time because Arians likes to go with tight ends on the field and multiple tight ends. So I don't think he will be missed a ton. He was very good in the locker room with Larry Fitzgerald. I don't see any problem there, but he will be missed in the locker room, I know, by the players. They added Ted Ginn in free agency. His speed is very appealing. He had a decent year in Carolina. We'll see if that can translate into a second year of success for Ginn, who's now, what is on his third team in 3 years, but he signed a pretty good deal. Not as much as Roberts, but 3 years, $9.75 million.
Now let's talk a little bit about Palmer. Carson Palmer, you know, you can say anything you want to say, but how he got there is kind of amazing. I mean, he came via the Oakland Raiders in what I considered to be a trade that shouldn't have been allowed because Cincinnati Bengals ended up getting, what I thought was a lot more value than he had. And then all of a sudden, a former head coach with the Raiders ends up with a killer cake job in Cincinnati for bringing a couple, three first-round draft choices there. Palmer did a pretty good job, though, this past year, didn't he? What did he show you, Jess, that you had question marks about with him?
Well, what's really interesting is what surprised me the most was his the way he was with his teammates, kind of his approach to football. He kind of got a reputation of being a me-first guy in Cincy and in Oakland. Whether that's fair or unfair, he proved to be very much a team player, very much about football. He's football first all the time. And after some turnover problems early in the season, he closed out the year, and that was the offense in general. The offense was up and down for the first half of the year, but the second half really came on strong. He threw for a career-high number of yards, over 4,200 yards, and he threw for 24 touchdowns. Those are, you know, the yardage was good, the completion percentage was good, the turnovers were high, but late in the year when the offense came around finally, he looked good. He still makes, like he always does his entire career, of a few throws, you're like, what are you doing, Carson? But his demeanor, he is tough as nails. He has a very calming demeanor. And so if something bad happens, he has all sorts of confidence in himself to be able to pull out of that and to bounce back. And the offense did that last year. And that's one of the – if he can continue to make a step forward as he did last year, he could have the finest year of his career in the year coming up.
Now, listen, I know that, by the way, we're talking to Jess Root. Jess Root's national blog on SB Nation is Revenge of the Birds. I always keep it. I love that because I want to say Revenge of the Nerds because there's plenty of nerds reading your column for sure, football nerds and like me. Tell me what the needs are for Arizona as we get into this draft coming up in 4 days.
Well, what the Cardinals have done, coming off their 10-win season, they don't have any glaring needs. Probably their biggest need they'd like to have filled is back at the back end of the defense at safety. You could always use, since John Abraham's, I don't know how much longer he'll be able to play, you'd like to add a pass rusher, ideally a premium pass rusher, someone who can develop into that. There's question marks on the right side of the offensive line. Right tackle is kind of, and right guard are both a bit up in the air. They have players there. How well they will turn out, how they'll pan out this year is yet to be questioned. And they still like to add speed at receiver, tight end as well. I see them looking at a safety probably. They've probably got 3 or 4 targets in the first couple of rounds, but if I had to rank them, number 1 would be safety, number 2 would be pass rusher, three would be tight end. I'd put right side of the offensive line, right tackle, right guard, then tight end.
Now, listen, Todd Bowles is still your defensive coordinator after interviewing everywhere for a head coaching job. And it was, that was a big – and from what I understand, they redid his deal, I think. I remember reading something about that. He is a quality defensive coordinator, really good in the defensive backfield especially. What do you see happening with Todd and his group? And Honey Badger, your boy – seemed to do okay out there. I didn't read any press clippings about him getting in trouble. I mean, and everything I read about his rehab, he was really going at it hard. Are they expecting big things from him again?
Well, they're bringing Matthew as long. They have little in the way of expectations of his recovery. They still don't have a timetable. He's been talking all along about being on the field week one with his teammates. I don't know if that's going to happen. I imagine the team will hold him back, start him off on the PUP list. Cardinals have an early bye. He might be able to come back early. But Matthew was fantastic last year, one of the most impactful rookies there was. He wasn't super flashy, but he was always in the right spot, made some great plays, big tackles. And off the field, he's been a dream. He's all about football. He's all about becoming a great football player. And it's a shame he had the injury that he did, because I worry about how – I mean, he's got the right attitude, and he's young, so I think he'll bounce back. But I don't know how he will be in terms of effectiveness in year two, being that he will have missed a lot of the workouts. As for Todd Bowles, he's every bit as effective as Bree Horton was without the swagger and the bravado.
Right.
And that's – it's when you've got Bruce Arians as head coach, it's a good – balance to have. He's really good at scheming. He looks at his personnel, and he's got the scheme he wants to do, but he works the player strengths into that, which is one of the greatest strengths he did, because he lost his two starting outside linebackers in one game, and then turned it around and added. He made the run defense even better, basing it on Matt Shaughnessy and his ability to set the edge and make things much better. He schemes extremely well, and I love it. It'll be fun to see year two what pieces are added to see what he can do.
Now their pick is pretty late in the first round. Let's get to – we're getting ready to finish up on this segment, and I do appreciate you coming on and being with us, even though I know you're real, real busy on Sundays. Who is Houston going to take? I mean, that's the bottom line. Are they going to trade down? Or are they going to take Jadeveon Clowney, who, in my opinion, is probably the guy they're going to take? What do you think, Jess? You got friends in Houston. Give me a little scoop here.
I'd be surprised if they don't take Clowney. At the end of the day, he's the best talent on the board. There's all – you're going to ding him on a lot of things, but you can ding a lot of players taking off him as well. But physically and the talent – he's still raw. You have to take Clowney. The other scenario I can see actually happening, trading down two or three spots, picking up Khalil Mack, who will be every bit as talented if they've got the trading partner, someone who wants Clowney or somebody who wants a quarterback at the top. I can see that happen. But I think it'll be either Clowney or they trade down a couple of slots and pick up Mack out of Buffalo.
Yeah. Hey, Jess, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Jess Root, Arizona Cardinal beat writer, and good luck to those D-backs, Jess. I know you need them to do well, too.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
All right. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. You're listening to Second Opinion on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Well, I tell you, it's been a tough show to top so far. And I'm looking forward to this next segment because I want to say a couple of things. I,
You know, I'm a big fan of my industry. I there are certain guys that I don't miss during the week. I'm starting to get big into MLB Network. I like listening to satellite radio, which is kind of cool. And hopefully one of these days when I syndicate, I'll be on satellite too. It's, you know, there's a guy named Grant Paulson that, in my opinion, is one of the stronger guys in the sports business. He's, you know, he started out as a kid, but he's a beat writer with the Washington Redskins. He's a 106.7 The Fan, and I'm not a big fan of 106.7 The Fan because I used to be on it, but and I kind of know a little bit about the situations and stuff over there. I follow the best guys, and just because I don't like a station or some of the people that work there in administration, I still listen to the good guys. And Grant's on from 10 to 2 in Washington on 106.7. If you haven't heard him, you got to hear him. He's on minors and majors from 8 to 10 on satellite radio on Sunday. And I get up real early on Sunday, and it's really nice to hear that a football guy, which I consider myself, another football guy, Grant, is also into baseball big time. And minors and majors is a unique show in that, well, Grant pretty much gets to talk about whatever he wants, but he always hits on stuff that I'm interested in. And Grant, I just wanted to thank you for that. The other thing I wanted to touch on was this gentleman. That's a bad word to use. He's really not a gentleman. His name's Donald Sterling, the guy that that Adam Silver gave a lifetime ban in the NBA. I mean, this is a guy that's worth supposedly $1.8 billion net worth, and I would say that his basketball team is worth half of that. But he, you know, and supposedly there was some reports to come out this week that he has cancer. Well, that, you know, when you're 80 years old and you live a fast lifestyle and you know, I mean, it's tough to be completely healthy when you're 80 anyway. Now, for all of you 80-year-olds out there that are healthy, you are, you know, definitely doing something right. Or you have great genes, or God just loves you, okay? And if you're an atheist, like some people I know, it doesn't matter. But every day you get up, it's a beautiful day. You just try to make the most of it. This guy evidently got away with, you know, doing some bad things for a long, long time. And one of the worst things he did was he was involved in a lawsuit with Elgin Baylor. Now, for those of you that are too young to know who Elgin Baylor is, maybe one of the greatest basketball players to ever live. He was a forward with the Los Angeles Lakers in the 60s, late 50s and 60s, early 70s. All-star every year. Phenomenal athlete. And evidently, Baylor sued him on racial grounds. There was some things that he said. Anyway, Baylor lost that lawsuit, and that in itself is disgusting to me because he was either misrepresented. You know, I'm going to be careful how I say that. He was either not represented very well, or there wasn't a chance for them to be able to utilize all of the evidence they had or things that were said. But it's just, it's sad that it came down to this. I'd really like to thank Adam Silver and the NBA and all the other owners. And listen, there are good NBA owners, you know. I'm a big Mark Cuban fan. Always have been. I know Scott O'Neill. He wouldn't work for anybody that wasn't a top-notch guy, and I'm sure the guy in Philly is that. Not a big fan of the Knicks guy, then nobody is. You know, it's just, in my opinion, when you're dealing with billionaires, you're dealing with you're dealing with a lot of different situations, and you know, they can't run these organizations themselves. But this guy Silver bought this team for $20 million, I think, is what Scott said, or less, and it's worth over $550-600 million right now, estimated. The guy, even paying 20%. Capital gains on the sale of his team, is going to walk away with well over $250 million in profit. Welcome to the United States. You know that, you know, you can do well here. But I'm just glad that the NBA, this could have been really terrible for the NBA. And Scott was right. When we were talking to Scott, he was talking about how the NBA coming off of some terrible situations and some, you know, a stoppage of work when David Stern took over the NBA. Too many Donalds. He did turn everything around, and now the NBA is a money machine. It is a very successful sport. It's a very successful brand. Anything that has NBA on it is going to make money, and the NBA is going to make money off of it. And money makes money, and that's the way business works. And I was happy to have Scott on the show and talk a little bit about that. I knew Scott when he was working with David Stern, and people that work with people that powerful don't really talk much about what goes on at work or anything. But Scott. Yeah, they'd like to keep their jobs. But Scott, in my opinion, loved working with David. And it sounds to me like he and Adam were close friends. And they probably still are very close friends. And anything that happens to a league, you know, all the leagues are different. I said this week when I was throwing tweets out there left and right. And by the way, if you haven't seen my normal 1,000 tweets a week, lately, it's because I've kind of laid back off of it. I'm trying to get some work done. I'm trying to clean my house. I'm trying to do a lot of different things. It's baseball season. I'm trying to coach. I'm looking at ball games. But, you know, there is no way that an organization as big as the NBA can be successful without a pretty good ownership group. And this guy was going to drag him down. And so they got rid of him, and that was smart. I just wish football would take notice. Because as most of you know, and, you know, I go through phases where I feel sorry a little bit for Roger Goodell. And I know I shouldn't feel sorry for a guy that's making $44 million a year doing the work that I would do for $500,000 a year probably and do a better job, by the way. And that's my opinion. And if you're not familiar with it, that's the name of this show, Second Opinion. Try me. You know, I'll give $43 million to all the players' favorite charity. I'll give it back to the old players. I'll do whatever. Nobody's listening to this. They're going, Bruce, you're not getting the job. Don't worry about it. But Roger Goodell, in my opinion, is a puppet. Adam Silver's not a puppet. Adam Silver was mad. Adam Silver reacted. Adam Silver knew what he was going to do. As soon as all this happened and he found out it was his voice on the tape, that's all he needed, his voice on the tape. Do you realize how many years we'd have to wait for Roger Goodell to make a decision if he heard a voice on the tape? They may lose the voice on the tape. Oh, I put it in the safe and it's not here anymore. The only reason I'm saying that is because they did that with three Super Bowls with the New England Patriots. I mean, they had a problem. And they just made it go away. The NBA could not make this go away, nor I don't think would they. This was something that had to be taken care of. Look, racism is HS, horse, you know what. Racism, there's no place for it. Nowhere. People are people, period. They are good people, they are okay people, or they are bad people. They are not white people, black people, Asian people, you know, Native Indians. And by the way, everybody that has stepped up, and I mean there are thousands of people that are people that need to be dealt with about Daniel Snyder and the Washington Redskins' name this week, guess what? Yeah, I think maybe you will change the name, Mr. Snyder, because it's exactly the same thing. Racism is racism. And I like, Matt, do you remember how long I talked about George Preston Marshall being a racist and not letting any blacks into the NFL. He was the last guy to take a black NFL player. How many years have I been saying that? 2 years, probably? A good 2 years. Guess what? It just made the pages of the Washington Post this week. Well, duh, just because somebody said it like John McCain.
Well, it's print media. They had to verify the facts.
Print media. Print media. I'm Bruce Saul. You're listening to Second Opinion. It's easier to say second opinion than Bruce Hall's second opinion. I get tired of saying my name. You'll see both of those in writing, in print media, probably.
Once they verify.
Yeah, you'll probably, once it's verified and they know I'm in trouble, I'm in the middle of a lawsuit. No, just kidding. We're going to have a great second half. I got Steve Buckhantz coming on. He is the voice of, talk about an NBA team that is doing some things, the Washington Wizards. You heard, and that's a terrible name, by the way. Yeah, they changed their name from the Bullets, which kill people. Haven't they? Don't they have a NRA membership? I mean, bullets don't kill people. People kill people.
But you do remember growing up here or being around here in the 80s, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a reason for it. I got news for you. Up at 80s and 90s both, you go into Northeast Washington, good luck. You know, I mean, the only people that had guns in Washington were the bad people, because you did 1 year in jail if you were caught with a weapon. One year.
See, I agree with the name change. The name change, what they changed it to was stupid.
Wizards. It's like the Grand Wizards. Yeah. Why didn't they just call themselves the Grand Wizards? That's kind of like the Devil Rays. Do you know that when the Tampa Bay Devil Rays changed their name to the Tampa Bay Rays, they went to the World Series. They went from being the worst team in the American League to the World Series. And you know why, Matt? Because the devil. And Matt, that's your guy.
I'm sure the coaches and players will agree to that.
You know, it's going to be a great second half. We're going to have Buckhantz on. I may keep Buck on for two segments because he's a lot of fun. I may let him go. He's probably looking outside going, I want to play golf today. They game seven actually is today, I guess. No, I'm sorry. Indiana won. They're gone, but they don't play again, I think, till Tuesday. So Buck's off today. He's probably home. It's 75, 80 degrees outside. People are going to be playing golf up and down the eastern seaboard. You know, normally we're either under 2 or 3 feet of snow or 10 inches of rain in one day. By the way, all of this weather we're having are not because of global warming. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And we'll agree with you when you produce your degree. There are no facts.
There are no facts. No facts at all. You know who I love listening to? Bob Wolf. You know, Bob, I love you, buddy. I get in here an hour early every week, don't I, Matt? And we have Bob on for an hour. And just working around him, getting ready for my show, hearing Bob Wolf just, you know, makes me feel like I'm doing the right thing. I mean, and next to Bob, I love you, buddy, but God, you make me feel young. Except for I don't have as much energy as you, and you're 93. I think he's either 93 or 94, but he is a wonderful guy. And the Con Ed scholarship program that's been going on forever, that is one of the greatest things in the world for athletes in that area, and is a lot of fun. We're going to go over the American League. There's some surprises in the American League. There's some surprises in the National League. After the Buck interview at the turn of the hour, we should be back on at what, 12:04, Matt, something like that. After the Buck interview, we're going to do baseball. And then I got a couple of football guys that are going to come on. Tony Major is going to talk about Cleveland. And I'm probably just going to do one segment of baseball, and I'll tell you when I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it at 12:15. That's when I'll do it. If Buck doesn't stay on. This is Bruce Hall. You're listening to Second Opinion. Hey, Matt, I have a question for you.
What?
When
your cup.
I'm not drinking the coffee because this stuff. For those of you that, one of the things you have to watch out for. Hey, we'll be back in a minute. Matt just cut me off. We'll be back in a minute on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back, and I'm on the line with an old friend and one of the greatest play-by-play guys anywhere, Steve Buckhand. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
How are you, man? Thank you for the kind words.
I'm doing great, man. You know, the older we get, the older friends we become.
Yeah, that's a good saying. I like that.
I was on the phone just a little while ago with Scott O'Neill, and I met Scott when he was in high school because his dad played baseball with me. And now Scotty's in his mid-40s, and he's doing all kinds of wild stuff in the NBA. And he said he knew you. He said he'd met you a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. And also, the older you get, the more that your mind says you can do things that your body won't allow you to.
I got to tell you, I'm out later today. I will be out with my son practicing my golf game, because the last time you saw me, I didn't have one. It was pretty bad.
Yeah. I know, although I know you can play because I have seen you play as well. And myself, same situation. Since last probably September, I've swung the club one time. That was I was lucky enough to play out in San Francisco with our old friend Dave Feldman, who works out there now. And that was the only time during the entire basketball season I've been able to play or swing a club. And I've got a couple of tournaments coming up, so I've got to get out there and play before I embarrass myself.
Well, I'm going to give you a call because I know you. You and I are the same. When you can play, it's early in the day, and you're on a day off. And you don't have many days off, especially now, do you?
Not now. It will go, hopefully, on into the end of May, maybe into June. But this is a lot longer than normal. Normally, I've already taken a vacation at this point in the season.
You know what? Listen, I had you on, about a month or so ago, and we were talking about the Wizards. And yep. It's still hard for me to call them the Wizards. I call them the Bullets about half the time, unless I remind myself.
I used to for about the first five or 6 years, and then it started to work. And every once in a while, it slips. And every once in a while, I just call them the Bullets for the heck of it on the air, because people know, obviously, who we're talking about, and it depends what you're referencing.
Well, how about what they did in five games? Now, you weren't surprised, and I weren't surprised. I wasn't surprised, Steve. I wasn't surprised either, because I've watched this team grow this year. And, you know, they've always had the talent, but they didn't really have everybody on the floor at the same time. And even losing the big guy, Nene, for the one game didn't hurt them at all, because they had guys that stepped right in. Why don't you just give me the play-by-play about what you think has happened in the last 3 weeks to a month, and why these guys could go into Indiana and win.
The biggest difference or change in the team that I've seen, Bruce, is that during the season, whether they had Nene or not, and he missed 21 straight games when he was injured February 23rd in Cleveland, he missed the next 21, even without him or with him, they often didn't give you a full 48 minutes of the most intense basketball they could play. Now, having said that, most teams in the league don't do that for 82 games. It's very difficult to do that for 82 games. The good teams do it for the majority of the time, and that's why they win. This Wizards club hadn't figured that out. They didn't know that if you played that kind of basketball, then this squad was pretty good, especially defensively. Now, they finished ninth in the league defensively in points allowed, and they were one of the better teams in the league, and they were that way last year as well. So they knew they could play defense, but they never really did it for a full 48 minutes. And when they did, you saw them beat teams like Miami at full strength and other teams that were good in the league. What happened was, going into the playoffs, they did not finish the season particularly well. They did win four straight games, but they were inconsistent. They never played 48 full minutes. And I was worried and concerned that when they got to Chicago for the first two games, in that type of atmosphere, which can be completely overwhelming if you've never faced it before, and Bradley Beal and John Wall had never faced it before, that they would be overwhelmed, that they would not be able to handle it, that if they got down, that crowd would take them out of the game. And that crowd got really loud a few times. Well, much to my delight and surprise, and every Wizards fan's surprise, Wall and Beal handled it beautifully. They were the entire team. Some kind of light went on, Bruce.
Right.
The playoff light, the postseason light went on. And see, I wasn't sure that they knew what the postseason light was. The young guys, the other guys have experience, and there's a lot of them. But that light went on, and they played confident and aggressive. passionate, intense, the way you need to play in the playoffs for 48 minutes. And I said at the beginning, I said that in the long haul, I thought the Wizards had better talent. Not that Chicago didn't have some great players, not that Noah's not great, and Gibson wasn't fabulous, and Boozer and Heinrich can't play. But that overall, I thought the Wizards had more talent, and that talent like that and passion will win out. And it did. That's what we saw. We saw a team that hustled. They got 50-50 balls. They got rebounds that played just as tough defense as Chicago dished out. And then the offensive talent came through, and that, to me, is why they won the series.
You know who's made the biggest difference, in my opinion, this year? And God knows, Bradley Beal, he's 20 years old, and he's having a great year, and he's just going to get better. Wall, to me, has been great because he does what's needed of him. If they need him to get some defensive rebounds, he does that. If they need him to dish off, he does that. If they need him to score, he does that. You know who I love? I love Marcin Gortat. Marcin Gortat, to me, is a big guy that can not only rebound, but he's pretty good around the basket moving with the ball.
Well, he's great with the screen and roll, and we've seen that all season. And, in fact, he went to John Wall during the season because he learned this from Steve Nash in Phoenix. And he said, look, trust me, if you get back to me off the pick, you know, we'll score. I'll be able to get to the basket. I'll score. And I think at that time, only he knew how good he was around the basket. And so now you see that on a consistent basis. You saw it a lot more at the end of the season. You're not seeing it quite as much now because teams know they do it and they have learned to defense it, especially Chicago when you play a team as many times as they did. When you play these teams in the playoffs night after night, everybody knows everybody else's quirks and idiosyncrasies and habits and style. So they're starting to defense the screen roll a little better, but he still will get a few each game, and he's very good at it. He, last couple of games he's missed a lot of shots in the paint that he probably should have had. He gets very down on himself twice after games that the team won. I walked up to him and said, great game. And he said, why? Because I took one shot each quarter and missed. I said, no, because you got 13 rebounds and you kept the ball alive and you had a great game. So he tends to get down on himself. But I agree with you. And, you know, you got to give credit to Ernie Grunfeld for getting him in here because Emeka Okafor wasn't going to play.
No, not at all.
And even if he did play, I'm not sure he would have produced in the same fashion that Marcin Gortat has. And he's been, you're right, he's been a huge, you know, there's a lot of difference makers on the team. I mean, Right. Clearly you could look at Trevor Ariza and say he might be the MVP of this team. I mean, both those guys have to be re-signed in the offseason, Gortat and Ariza. Lately, Trevor Booker has been fabulous, hustling and knocking balls back and keeping balls alive and getting more aggressive and confident. So there are a lot of different players on the team that have really come together, and I just think collectively they're playing the best they've ever played.
You know, the thing that I find hard to understand, and of course you've watched the NBA for years, and there are guys that have over a, and we're going to break here in about 30 seconds if you can stick on, Buck. I'd love to finish up with you in another segment if it's okay with you.
Sure.
What I was going to say is, how does somebody shoot 60% from 23 feet and shoot 30% from the free throw line?
I wish I could.
Where's Buzzy Brayman when you need him, right?
I wish I could answer that question. I marvel at it all the time. I don't know what it is. I've asked Phil Chenier, my partner, many times what that could be. There's no scientific answer for it. So I still, when I see a great shooter miss from the free throw line, I just shake my head. But, you know, I've never really been in that situation, so I couldn't tell you.
I'm going to call Buzzy. When the season's over, hopefully in June, we'll get him. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. I got Steve Buckhantz on the line. We're going to have some more fun at the turn of this commercial. We'll be back.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation anytime by calling 240-317-7294. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
We're back. I'm on the line with Steve Buckhantz, the voice of the Washington Wizards, the Washington Bullets, the Washington League Generals, and the James Madison University, whatever they are. I know they're purple. Their colors are purple. What were they, Steve?
Purple and gold, and they've been the Dukes for many, many years.
Can I tell you what? You know my summer baseball team's purple and gold, and I went to East Carolina, and we were purple and gold. So we got a lot more in common.
We need to get them on the D.C. United broadcast.
Oh, geez. What's the D.C. United? Is that arena football?
That's the soccer team, but I got to tell you, I couldn't give you the difference between the midfield and the back lot. I'm not sure if I that's one sport I couldn't call, and I guess hockey's another. I mean, I'd have to try to fake it, but it wouldn't last very long.
I don't know how hockey announcers do it, because you can hardly see what's going on anyway.
It's an amazing sport to call, and I'll tell you what's different between when you watch hockey and you watch the NBA or any basketball. Hockey announcers on television, for the most part, call play-by-play like it's on radio, if you think about
right,
it.
Right, right.
They call, you know, one puck pass to another over the blue line, back and forth. It's almost like you're listening to a radio broadcast, where a basketball broadcast in this day and age used to be back in the day they did. But in this day and age, we don't call it like that. We don't call it like it's on radio. I wonder why that is sometimes. Maybe it's because hockey moves so fast that you need the announcer to tell you who has the puck every time the puck is passed. But it's a totally different sport to call.
Well, you know, I used to be a big fan of Smokin' Al Kokins when he was teamed up with that other guy that was – he's not here anymore, his partner.
I still am a big fan of Smokin' Al Kokins. Yeah, he was teamed up with
I can't remember his name either,
Jeff
Steve.
Jeff Rimmer was play-by-play guy.
He was – you know what? They used to sit in Section 100 – because I had season tickets behind them, one row behind them. And they were similar to what they've done to you. They weren't, you know, they weren't down on the glass. It was easier for them to see hockey from a little higher up and over the glass. And they were literally right in front of me. And it was fun to listen to them talk and go back and forth. And that was the first time I met Smokin' Al. And then, of course, you know, years later, I've been to all kinds of things with him and played golf with him, and he's a really, really good guy.
Terrific guy, one of the great guys in our business, and very, you know, the guy can do a lot of things. He can do a lot of sports and a lot of things, and very good talent. Now those guys at the Verizon Center sit way up.
Yeah. Oh, they do? Even higher?
Yeah, way higher than us.
Oh, jeez.
They're up, way up. And I don't know how clearly they have to watch the monitor a lot during the game, because or have binoculars or something. I'm not sure how they really see what's going on the ice, but that's a challenge.
Well, they can't even put one of those huge Jerry Jones type TVs in, because then the people in the upper deck couldn't see the ice.
They're not in the stands. They're in a press box area that's up high. So, you know, I'm sure they have enough room to do whatever they need to do and not block anybody's view. But they're still just logistically, they're just a long way away from the ice.
Have you guys buried the hatchet between? I know when you work with the Wizards, you can't say bad things about them. But I remember when you guys lost your seats on the floor. I just couldn't believe that, because I was so used to having. I mean, if I sat. You've been to one baseball game with me. If you haven't, I got to take you now. I'm going to take you.
We've been to at least one.
You've been to some big games with me.
I listened to you yell at the third baseman from your seat. So the umpire, yeah.
Yeah, well, there was a cut when Bryce Harper got drilled last year. I was ready to fight. No, nobody, nobody on the entire Washington Nationals bench even approached the field. I would have been. They would have had to peel me off the pitcher. I would have been out. Hey, now I'm going to let you have some fun, because this is what you'll be doing if you ever quit announcing for a team. You'll be announcing for all teams, and that's my opinion. But because you're wonderful at what you do, and I love it. But listen, I want to know, who are the two teams that are going to end up there? Let's assume Washington wins the next round, because we are going to beat Indiana in the next round.
I like your confidence.
No, I firmly believe that. I really do. They should have lost to Atlanta.
Atlanta had their chance in Game 6. That's interesting. And let me just say one thing about Game 6, which I know you probably saw this. If you didn't, you saw the highlights. But you know, I complain a lot about the inconsistency within the league by the officials, and I love the officials. Most of them are good friends of mine, but I know it infuriates me, and if you watch a broadcast, you can see it infuriates everybody. Not to say that these guys aren't human, and
unless you're talking about the guy you're going to talk about, Joey Crawford.
Well, you know, that's all right. I happen to think he's a great referee.
I know he is.
But beside that point, here's the type of inconsistency that bothers me.
Okay.
We saw what caused Nene to get suspended from a game when he put his hands on Jimmy Butler's head and did whatever he did, and that was deemed whatever, and he got suspended for the next game, which is a big deal. We saw what Zach Randolph did when threw a punch, and that got him suspended. Most of the replays I saw and the announcers I listened to said that wasn't really a punch. He shouldn't have gotten suspended for it. Why not in Game 6 of the Atlanta-Indiana series when Mike Scott and George Hill grabbed each other by the head and did, for the most part, the exact same thing that Nene and Jimmy Butler did? Why were they not suspended for the next game? Forget about Paul George coming onto the court. That didn't bother me. I mean, he took one step on and he didn't incite anything, and he
should not have.
But these two guys grabbed each other by the head in a vicious fashion, and Phil Chenier texted me and said, "Did you see that?" And I said, "Clearly, they'll both be suspended for the next game." Now, how do you look at that after the game? And no foul was even called on the floor during that scuffle, or no technicals or double technicals or anything, the same thing that was done with Nene and Jimmy Butler. And then Nene, of course, was ejected and was suspended the next game. How do you look at that after the game as one of the officials of the league, which they do, and not deem those two players to be suspended? That to me is where the inconsistency falls, and that's frustrating as a fan and a broadcaster and everybody else. And I'm not trying to be biased with Nene. I'm just saying that I was just surprised when I saw it, that two guys grabbed each other by the head in a really fighting type fashion, and yet weren't suspended. I don't understand why there wasn't a suspension.
I agree. Let me ask you this, Buck. Is it like the NFL and there's one guy in charge of deeming out the punishment in the NBA?
Ultimately, there's one guy that's the supervisor of officiating of the league, and he makes the call. But I it's not a one man process. I think there's a few guys that take a look at those tapes and they review it and they discuss it at the league office, and then they make their decision. So, you know, it's not just one man. It's a bunch of guys that are over there looking at it.
Well, that certainly hurt Memphis not having that guy in there.
Huge.
Well, he is the heart of that team.
Yeah, I mean, that was unfortunately for them, that was probably the series. So that's too bad. But to get back to your question, I hope the Wizards can beat this team. You know, they've had some problems, obviously, in Indiana. They've lost 12 straight games there, which is not good. But the last time they played the Pacers, as we know, which was just a few weeks ago, and it was when Indiana was in one of their funks. That was on March 28th, and the Wizards won handily at Verizon Center, 91-78. So they can beat this team, even though they lost the previous two games by large margins. If the Wizards can get past them and then wind up facing who we all think will be Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals, look, they beat them twice this year too. Yeah, they didn't beat them in Florida, and the last time they beat them, the Heat didn't play their guys. But the first time they beat them, they played everybody. I mean, LeBron, Wade, Bosch. It was a full tilt game, and Washington won it here. So, that matchup doesn't frighten me as much as some other teams might. Can they win that? Yeah, they could win that. So. Are you asking me who's going to go to the finals?
Yeah. Hey, can I tell you what? I'm going to stick my neck out and say that if they win this next series against Indiana, and I firmly believe they can beat Miami. Now, the thing I like about it, Buck, is I like the fact, you know how the NBA is, and I won't say anything else, but they like having the great players play.
Having the great players play. They like having the big markets involved.
Right.
There's no question about that.
But isn't Washington a bigger market than Miami?
It is, actually.
It is.
And it is.
And we have big players.
That's where you combine the big market size and then the marquee players.
Right.
But now you're right. Washington is the rest of the nation is getting a taste of John Wall and Bradley Beal, and you know he's become a marquee player. Nobody's as marquee as LeBron James is, but there's a certain aura about that team that makes them watchable. Kind of like watching a golf tournament with Tiger Woods in it. You know, when Miami plays, you're sort of compelled to watch. But, yeah, I think that, look, you know, if you're being really optimistic and thinking great things and hoping this team can continue to play the way they have, they could beat the next two teams in the next two rounds, Indiana and probably Miami, unless Brooklyn or Toronto were able to get past them. And if they wound up in the finals, somebody told me the other day, Bruce, and you would know this better than me or anybody, that the original odds on them was 120-1 to win the championship.
At least. I think it was even higher in some hotels.
It might have been.
Yeah.
And that now somebody said it was 25-1.
Yeah, that's about right. I'll
take them
at 25-1.
Yeah, me too.
They have a chance. Hey, how about the West? Now, you know, I'm a big Tim Duncan fan, and I'm just a big Spurs guy. I love the way they play basketball. I love the way they're coached. I love the way that they do everything. Are they going to win today? Isn't it today they play? I think they play today.
They play at 3:30 against Dallas. Yeah.
I mean, that's scary.
It is. That series has been a great one. Very competitive, back and forth. And you never know about Dallas. That's the thing. You never know when they're going to come through big. The fact that it's in San Antonio, I think, is huge. Not that home court means everything, but clearly it means a lot in the NBA. And, boy, I watched Tony Parker, and I think to myself, this guy – he's not particularly flashy. In fact, in the same vein as a Steve Nash, he's got a little more than Steve Nash offensively, but he just in the vein that he controls the basketball, he controls the flow of the game, he keeps his dribble alive, which is critical for any point guard, and he just makes things happen. And then he hits shots that are clutch. So I think he's just a great player. I don't care how old the guy is getting, he's still an unbelievable player. So looking at that game, Bruce, I think I would pick San Antonio just because it's a game seven and they're playing at home, and I think that's big for them. So, you know, I'm interested to see the game, and I want to see the first game too, which is Brooklyn and Toronto. That comes on at 1:00.
Yeah, that's going to be a real interesting game for New York, for the New York area, because they really need to win that game. Buck, you've been next to him. How tall is Tony Parker? Because he doesn't look very big.
No, he's not. Of course, when you see him on the court relative to other players, he's not going to look as big because most of them are bigger.
Yeah.
But when you see him standing next to you or me, he's like anybody else. He's taller. You know, I don't know. He's sick. I don't know what he's listed at.
Six foot a half an inch or something.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's not real tall.
He's like Robert Griffin. He's not 6'2½". He's 6'3". Hey,
yeah, but built, and they all seem to look a little bigger. And even the guys that are small are, like I say, compared to us, they're tall.
Hey, Buck, I can't thank you enough for calling in. You know, anytime there's an NBA anything going on and things start getting crazy, I got to talk to you. You know that.
Well,
Steve
Buckhantz,
everybody. He's the voice of the Washington Wizards. He and his buddy Phil Chenier have been my favorites for years. We'll be back in a minute with Second Opinion on News Talk 1230 WFAS. Hey, I'm back, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Kentucky Derby, which I watched, and has anybody noticed this? The Derby gets later and later every year. It used to be many years ago, I want to say the Derby was like 4:30, and then it was 4:45, then it was 5, then it was 5. It's like 6:24 yesterday. One day, hopefully before I'm gone from this earth, it'll be at
11 p.m. under the lights.
Well, they're just trying to sneak it into prime time.
I think what they're doing, well, they on
it'll be a,
Saturday, that's probably prime time, 6:30, yeah, 6 o'clock.
They may make it a SNL sketch.
I tell you, it's always great listening to Steve Buckhands. Buck, I've known Buck forever. We're both from Arlington, Virginia. You know, everybody that I grew up with and everybody that Buck grew up with, none of us have changed. If we're not in jail, none of us have changed. We're all the same. Same guys. I mean, basically the same guys. The only difference is that we tweet. Nobody would have ever paid any money thinking that any of us would tweet back in the day. I'm going to talk briefly because we're going to have Tony Mazur on at 11:45. And knowing Tony, it could be 11:50 anyway. Tony, I love you, buddy. So call in on time so I can talk Cleveland Browns Johnny Manziel fever. But I want to talk about the Derby. California Chrome, first horse from the West Coast to ever win the Derby since 1962. That was before John Kennedy was assassinated. That was before my father died. That was before I was in the sixth grade. I mean, this horse is, if you've ever seen the movie Secretariat, well, it's not Secretariat. I've seen the movie Secretariat. This reminds me nothing of that movie because Secretariat was like two horses in one. What was the name of the horse? Seabiscuit. That Seabiscuit, the movie, in my opinion, was one of the greatest movies ever made. I could watch Seabiscuit almost every day. I mean, it's like the Bourne movies. Like yesterday, I watched the Bourne Supremacy for about the 1,246th time.
Yet you still haven't seen Dazed and Confused.
See,
yet.
I haven't seen Dazed and Confused. Well, you need to remind me. Matt, you know what? You remind me about stuff during the week like never. Okay?
I'm busy during the week.
Oh, stop it. No one's too busy.
I am a businessman.
Oh, God. All right, here we go.
I'm not just a businessman. I'm a businessman.
You're a businessman. Yeah, you are a businessman. But anyway, California Chrome went off 5-2. If you had wheeled Kentucky Chrome and Danza with the field, you would have won a ton of money. And see, that's how I play. I like to find two horses in the top three in the triple, and I wheel them with everybody. That way, you get all the long shots too. Guess what? The number two horse went off at 39-1. It paid $3,000 the triple. That's ridiculous. The Exacta was ridiculous. The Exacta was, I want to say it was $300. You know, because nobody had, if you wheel the favorite, if you had just bet straight bets on the favorite, you don't wheel them, you bet them individually. And you play Chrome with the number two horse, you win a ton of money. That's a $2 bet, and it paid $300 and some. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure I've got it right here. I was reading it, and by the way, this horse is a beautiful horse. He's got a chest and a head like a horse three hands higher than he is.
Just like a horse.
He's just a big, strong.
I hope so.
Yeah, but these are only 3 years old, these horses. They're babies. Commanding Curve was the horse that finished second. And Danza was third, and Wicked Strong, the horse everybody had because of Boston, he got fourth. So unless you had the pick four, or the pick five, or the pick six, you didn't hit that. Oh, by the way, the Exacta, 517, $340. So I play, even if I'm conservative and I play $20 Exactas, I make $3,400 on that $20 bet. But I wouldn't have just bet him. I would have bet everybody. I would have bet Chrome with Curve, Danza, Wicked Strong, all of them. So I would have had to play $20 times another 17. So that's $340. So I would have ended up having to spend $360. Now, I might have even put the favorite underneath the field because Chrome could have finished second. Could you imagine what the exact would have been if Commanding Curve had won and passed California Chrome, which there was no chance that was going to happen because
the guy that was on top of California Crow, Victor Espinoza, who, by the way, won his second Kentucky Derby, which is almost – that really put him on a short list.
So to speak.
He was doing flips, and I don't even know if he had but one foot in the stirrup when he went across the finish line. He was having fun. But that is a beautiful horse. And the trainer was 77 years old and, you know, a wonderful guy. They, you know, Sherman is, you know, Art Sherman is one of the best trainers anywhere. Here was the amazing thing about this race. Now, I've been to the Keeneland auction. Okay, I've been to the Keeneland. I've been to where these billionaires from all over the world come in and bid on yearlings and spend millions of dollars. When you breed a horse, there's two fees. Number one, the mare, okay, if you've got a brood mare, you have to pay a stud to come make love with your horse, and they help her. They help him because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing the first time. But after hundreds of times, like Stormcat, who used to
work in the chest.
Stormcat used to make $500,000 a day just to make love. That's my kind of job,
the
right
John
there.
John Travolta of horses.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, and he just died this past year. And
John Travolta?
And, no, not well. He's due, but no, I'm talking about Stormcat. Stormcat made more money than any other stud in the history of horse racing. But anyway, the mare was $8,000, and the stud was $2,000. This horse was bought, I want to say, for $10,000. Hey, this horse just won the Kentucky Derby. He's like a $10,000 claimer from where he was bred, and he's a stakes race winner. Oh, and he may win the Triple Crown because he has a chance since he won the first one. Matt always says, look, go ahead, say what you're going to say,
basically,
Matt.
Since Barbarossa, everybody's been saying that for the first race of the season.
All right, who was the last Triple Crown winner?
Oh, man,
it wasn't Seattle Slough because I love Seattle Slough. He won two.
I could do the Google.
I forget. It's like 1980s or it was in the 80s. But anyway, make a long story short, this horse, Matt, this is what we call logic, okay? You have to explain this to some people. He's the only horse, Matt, that has a chance this year to win the Triple Crown.
Well, I know that.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
So, and if he wins the Preakness in a couple of weeks in Baltimore, which is a half hour from here, by the way, and that would be a great race to go to. We should just do the show up there. Roy can probably get a pass for the his father-in-law is a big horse guy. Maryland horse guy. Roy's not here today because he's celebrating his anniversary, and I don't blame him because he's married to a beautiful woman who I have no idea why she's with Roy. I'm just kidding.
Roy's my boy. Mixer will travel.
Is my boy. But anyway, yeah, we may have to think about that for next week. What we'll probably do is we'll do the show here, pretend like we're there. We'll hire a couple of ponies.
Let's get my dog to run around.
Well, let's just get
a
couple of ponies and bring them inside.
We can
stun them, you know, like the PETA people. And by the way, there was a horse involved in this, and I don't even want to say which one it is because it's pretty nasty advertising. They were using buzzers or something, stun buzzers to get the horses to race faster. That was alleged, and they never proved it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's their story, and they're sticking to it. But anyway, this race was pretty good. Real quick, let's
We talked about this last year.
Yeah.
That there's just not...
Last year, we talked about a lot of things.
I wish Roy was
Can
here.
Can everybody hear my paper?
Yeah, it's verified. That the horses just are not bred to go full three races anymore.
Oh, you're right. No, you're right. You're right. Well,
Do you think this horse really has a chance
to
break that?
Because all he did was what Seabiscuit did. He went out, he worked out, he stayed up close to the leaders, he wasn't working hard, and then when he got on the stretch, he looked around and just passed everybody and won by several lengths. No, this horse is a natural. This horse probably doesn't even have to work out much. I mean, first of all, you know, they got to bring him up, so he'll make the trip probably tomorrow. And they probably won't even do anything except walk him, work him out. They made it, I don't know what they'll do, but they won't. He won't get a good workout until later in the week. And then he'll probably stop working out, I would say, Thursday, Friday, Thursday the week of the Preakness. And then all he's going to do in Baltimore at Pimlico is do the same thing that he did yesterday. There's probably going to be 15 or 16 horses. There may only be 14 at Preakness. And he's just going to hang with the leaders. Somebody's going to take the speed. He's going to stay close, look around, pass everybody.
If you had the option,
this is going to be a. I'm going to make this. He is going to be the Triple Crown winner. This horse. This,
all right. So you would take the doubt. You would take the bet.
If it was legal here, I'd make book with it because in England there that's where you want to be, because I'm guessing that if you went to Bovada, which Roy likes to go to, I like Odds and Scores because it's got a lot of the hotels on there in Vegas. If you went there. Right now, you could probably find Triple Crown odds at about between 5 and 10 to 1, and he's that good.
All right, so I'll put it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
For this week, and then
absolutely,
if he wins, you can have the bragging rights.
Oh, he's going to win. He's going to win next week, and I think he'll win. I think he'll win the big race because I think this horse is that strong. I really do. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall for Matt Lynch. We'll be back in a minute on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294. Or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
You know, I don't go against my old buddy very often, and I hope I'm wrong about this game, but I looked at these games all morning, and there's only two games I even like out of all the games today. It's just that tough of a choice to make from a standpoint of winning or losing. I mean, they're just great matchups. I'm going to take Fernandez, the kid with a 1.59 ERA, and he won the Cy Young Award last year in the National League at the age of 20. He's gonna win against the Dodgers at home. The Marlins are playing incredibly well right now, and you know, the Miami Marlins are a game. Actually, they're two games above 500. Well, who would have ever thought that? In the National League East, there is not a team that is not 500 or better. Atlanta is 17-12. Washington, 17-13. The Mets, 15-14. Miami, 16-14. Phillies, 14-14. I mean, it's unbelievable. The Milwaukee Brewers, even though they've lost two games in a row, and John Nairn, as you remember, he, you know, my old buddy, he's the hitting coach for the Brewers. He called it when I interviewed him at spring training in Arizona. He said, that's our plan. We're going to win the Central. Well, they're 21-10, six games out in front after April over St. Louis, who's a game under 500. Cincinnati, 14-16. Nobody expected them there. Pittsburgh, struggling, although they won last night, I'm pretty sure. No, they lost. They lost Colorado. Chicago is Chicago. The Cubs are going to be in last place, as usual. San Francisco's won two in a row in Atlanta. They've hit out of five hits, four of them have been home runs in two nights, and they're 2-0. They're 8-2 in their last 10, but I am not taking them today because something's wrong with Madison Bumgarner. I don't know what it is, but the last two outings, he hasn't looked himself. And Wood's going for Atlanta, even though he's only 2-4. He has a 2.93 ERA, and they, even if they win this game, they lose the series. So you got to figure Atlanta's going to win today. And plus, if I do that, it'll probably be good for San Francisco. Colorado's 19-13. The other game I liked was Wood. So Fernandez with the Marlins, Wood with the Braves. Don't touch another game if you're relying on me to help you. Now, there's a real good chance that the Yankees are going to win today with CC? Because, I, you know, even though CC's ERA is 5.11, I've liked what I've seen out of him. He's moving the ball around. They're going to hit the ball. They got beat yesterday because Smoke drove in like four or five runs. But I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. And I left the Mets alone, even though it's Dylan G throwing. I consider Dylan their ace right now. Chacin is pitching for the Rockies. This is his first time out. He started the year on the DL. He may be strong today. The Rockies are on fire. They're hitting something like 22 points higher than everybody else in the league as a team. And that's batting average, but that's also runs scored per game. Now, their pitching staff isn't the greatest in the world, but they're in the West, and if you look at the National League, no Tony, huh? I'm just waiting on Tony Mazur. He'll remember it when he looks at the clock. Milwaukee, 6 games out in front. San Francisco, Colorado, the Dodgers, all three of them are in the mix. There's only two games separating the Dodgers and San Francisco. In the American League East, you've got Baltimore. You got the Giants in front. Baltimore's a half a game back. Boston 2 games back. Tampa Bay 3 games back. Toronto will not be there when it's all said and done. But the other 4 teams, that is going to be a tough, tough race, in my opinion. And that's the best division in that league. And you know what? The East is the best division in both leagues. The National League East, the American League East. Easily going to be 2 or 3. Tony Mazur is on the line. Tony.
Hello.
Hey, buddy. How are you? Thanks for calling in, Tony. I need to know what's going on with the Browns. We got the draft coming up this week. Who are they going to take? Are they going to trade up? They're going to trade down? They're going to make sure they get Manziel? They're going to make sure they don't get Manziel? What does Tony Mazur hear on the street?
Well, this is what I hear is Ray Farmer, who's the new GM of the Browns, remember that whole situation, is he going to get the job in Miami or Cleveland? And if you're choosing Cleveland, that really kind of tells you something about the future of the
I don't know what happened.
It wasn't you, Tony. It was operator error. We actually lost our signal for a minute. But anyway, we're back. Right. So go ahead. Pick up where you left off.
I was going to say that I believe the Browns are going after Manziel, and the reason for it is Jimmy Haslam saw his company, his pilot Flying J. You remember that last year with the rebate gate?
Oh, that's right. Yep.
The company.
Yep.
And seeing his product take a hit on both ends, the football team he owns and his family's trucking company go through massive hits in the last year. Who brings that kind of credibility and the kind of cockiness and just the
money?
And that's why I believe it's going to be Manziel. And I think if you're the owner, and regardless of what the GM Ray Farmer wants, you might have the owner stepping in and say, "I want this guy." I know there have been rumors about Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, even doing the safe pick, with getting a tackle. But the problem is, the Browns have always gotten safe picks and tackles, and they've missed on the quarterbacks. They've missed on the running backs. They've missed on the high receivers like Braylon Edwards. So
I agree with you.
The Browns, I mean, and you know, Steny Hoyer, the quarterback, is pretty good.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a good backup. He's a good. What they'll do is they'll compete. I bet they compete, and that's going to be a big deal in Cleveland.
And don't forget, they got a bolstered backfield. They have Deion Lewis, and they have Ben Tate.
Ben Tate's a monster. Tate's, and they've got an offensive line, even though they lost one guy. They'll pick some guys up. They'll bring some guys into camp. Yeah, no, I think offensively, no matter who they get, they're going to be better than where they were with Brandon Weeden.
Well, they lost an offensive lineman last year, Sean Laval, who's now with the Redskins, I'm just telling you, the Redskins fans out there, Sean Laval is so bad, you may as well put a parking cone there, and it would do a better job blocking.
Can I tell you what? All we did was sign bad guys. Haven't you ever watched us in the offseason? It's terrible. We got 2 minutes left, Tony, and I really appreciate you coming back on because, you know, when things happen in radio, it's tough. Hey, let me ask you this. Who do you think is going to take Clowney? Do you think the Texans are going to go ahead and take him with the first pick?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know what? That's
I believe so.
That's what I hear. I was trying to get get Son of Bum on, Wade Phillips, today. I never did hear back from him. He must be in church or something. But I was trying to get him on because he would have told, he would have said Manziel, right? No, they're taking Manziel. I told him to take Manziel. And it's like, who knows? What does.
They're all like, oh, you got to pick him because he's a Texan. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, you put Clowney on that defense.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I know they went 2-14, and of course they tanked. I gotta believe they're picking Clowney, and I think they'd be stupid to do that.
Yeah, their problem was. Well. Yeah, you're right. Their problem wasn't their defense so much as it was their offense sucked. It was horrible.
Yep.
Hey, listen. Always great to have you on, Tony. I can't thank you enough for coming on. How can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tony Mazur, TonyMazur, and I got some cool things coming on up. I'll be announcing on there. I got actually good things happening for me finally.
That sounds great. Listen, you know we're always
he's leaving Cleveland.
Hey, can I tell you what, Tony? We've always been a big fan of yours. You know that, and I don't forget my guys. You understand? Hey, Tony Mazur, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back next week with another big show. Probably just as big an NBA show as today was. And we will be announcing the draft. We'll see you next week on Second Opinion.